This is our, what is this? This is our third episode, officially. And I'm here with Rob Hakimian.
What's up?
Regular dude. Hello. John's not here today. So to fill the Sean-shaped hole in our hearts, Eric Berber is back again from last week.
Hello again.
And then our fourth chair guest man is Philip Kosoris.
Hey.
Is that how you pronounce it? Did I get it right?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, good enough. All right, so let's just jump right into news. The XX announced a new album.
They didn't actually announce the album. They announced that they're starting to record a new album.
Oh, true, true. But, you know, the fact that there is a new album that will exist at some point is pretty exciting. I don't know. I guess not entirely surprising, but...
I kind of hoped they'd already been starting.
I know.
Like months ago, but...
Yeah, I guess
it's good. It's good that they've taken a break and they're not going to get burnt out.
I guess it is surprising that that they're just starting it. But I guess, I mean, Jamie XX did that Gil Scott-Heron album, which I actually just listened to and like quite a bit. I don't know if you guys.
Yeah, it's good. I like it.
Yeah, and then did you guys hear about this last week? Left Brain from Odd Future got some charges thrown at him for. "Quote unquote slapping a photographer at some show that they're at."
Yeah, it was at the Voodoo Fest in New Orleans, and that's the some female photographer didn't press charges immediately,
right?
But complained that he slapped her and threw her camera and slapped her camera to the ground, and it was like trying to slap other photographers, and then she ended up pressing charges later after Odd Future.
Yeah.
Made a pretty, maybe offensive statement regarding it.
I'm sure. What else?
They took no responsibility for it, basically.
And that, I guess that initial thing happened 2 weeks ago or so, and then the charges were pressed this week, I guess? Or
yeah,
late last
recently.
Week? And so I guess that's not, it's kind of shitty, but I guess it's not surprising.
Well, it's not surprising. It brings up both sides, because on one end, if you're a photographer, I've been a photographer in a photo pit shooting on the future.
Yeah.
And any photographer getting into that photo pit should know what you're shooting beforehand, whether it's on future, whether it's guar, whether it's whatever, you know, is blood going to be spitting at me, or, you know, are there going to be birds involved, pyrotechnics, like what's going to happen? So she should know that Odd Future can be aggressive, can throw water at their photographers. This is all stuff that happens before. And that nothing about that should have surprised her. But on the other hand, it doesn't give any actor right to physically assault people just doing their job, you know, photographing them. That's crossing the line. And especially when you get into a man versus woman issue, you know, it's even worse where he's hitting a woman. But... yeah, just because Odd Future have kind of a hall pass, I guess, for this kind of stuff usually, that doesn't mean Left Brain has the right to hit somebody and then to claim like no responsibility after the fact. And I think that's why they're getting into trouble with this, is because they didn't apologize immediately or something like, he took it too far, he got caught up in the moment, something like that. They just kind of denied everything and then got a photographer that was friends with the band to corroborate the story that the band was putting out.
And the press release, the statement that the band issued was very much like, well, the photographer should have known that, you know, Odd Future doesn't like photographers. It's like,
when I saw Odd Future, they were fine with the photographers for one song, but then afterwards, like, Tyler walked up to the edge of the stage and said, all you photographers need to get out of the way or all your stuff's just going to get broken. And, like, I wouldn't be surprised if they did give a warning at this show as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that happening, like, I photographed them twice. One time they kicked a bunch of beer cans, you know, at the front of the audience where the photographers were. There was no photo pit for that one. But it was just like, you got hit if you were in the way. But it was, you know, it wasn't really surprising. And then the second time, they were pretty fine with the photographers. So, I mean, I think it's just how they're feeling on any given day issue. But, yeah, I really think... like, and then the second thing that happened with them is they got kicked off of the Big Day Out tour just shortly thereafter this announcement. but it was kind of an unrelated. I guess it had to do more with their lyrical content. And
which I don't understand. I don't understand. Why did they book them in the first place if they didn't like their lyrics?
Well, I don't think it was the festival's issue with it. I think once they were booked, people started protesting the festival. Gay and lesbian rights groups started protesting, and then the festival reconsidered after the protests.
I'm really bummed where, like, kind of Odd Future has gone. And when did they kind of, like the first time I was kind of aware with them was when they appeared on Jimmy Fallon. Do you guys remember that performance?
Yeah.
And that was so good. It was so fucking good. Because, I mean, there was this air of mystery around them. No one knew who they were. They were wearing ski masks. They kind of had this weird kind of, you know, that weird horrorcore. I mean, it wasn't horrorcore, but like that. They had like fucking gnomes on the stage with them and stuff like that.
And they did their best song as well.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, that song, the way they performed it for Fallon was better than it turned out to be on Goblin, I thought. And then, like, just, it's kind of like the classic case of a band of being oversaturated, because as time goes on, they get more and more well-known and become more and more of a, you know, a known quantity, and all that weird kind of mystery that surrounded them in the beginning is totally gone, and it's only been, like, you know, 5 or 6 months, and it's become almost the opposite of that in some cases. I don't know.
Here's my question about this whole situation is, like, why do they have beef with, like, the media and photographers? Like, they would be absolutely nothing without any of those people. Like, they came up through, like, these strange blogs and, like, their YouTube videos. That was, like, the first time I saw them. It was, like, Evan sent me, like, a YouTube video of them, like, skating around and stuff. And it's just like it seems like they came from what they're trying to destroy.
Well, I don't think they have beef. I don't think they have beef with the media.
Well, then what's their deal?
It's part of their act. I mean, they're on stage with these, you know, this angry, intense rap group that, like, they're posing for the camera. They're gonna, you know, swat at the camera. They're just feeding into their whole, like, mythology. You know, I don't think it's like for the media in any way.
With Odd Future, it's always been fans number one. Like, they really love their fans, I think. And I think they would actually still be big, even if blogs hadn't picked them up, just through word of mouth. And I think they really love their fans, and it's like, fuck everyone else. If they're not going to like our stuff, at least these guys do.
Well, I mean, one of the things they were known for straight out of the gate was the Fuck Two Doughboys thing, so...
Yeah, that's true.
And... Also,
but the right after the Fuck Two Dope Boys line is that we roll with the fader now, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, you know, fuck this one blog, you know, we're with this other blog now.
Yeah. And I feel like what Phil is saying, this kind of, like, intense, they've kind of garnered this image for them. I mean, that kind of weird air of mystery that surrounded kind of Earl and all that kind of weird stuff that Tyler was into. Has kind of faded away for them, just being their image being this kind of confrontational hip-hop group. And I think really that has a tone of, like very teenage, juvenile antics to it, which is just like...
Well, it shouldn't take us this long to figure that out, that they're just juvenile teenagers.
Yeah. But, like, that's all that's left. Like, it really hasn't kind of... Their confrontational stuff really has no weight behind it, where if they had left that mystery intact, it kind of, I mean, for better or worse, it kind of would have remained intact, I think.
I think the life cycle of blog hype on the internet is just too fast for them, because by the time their cycle of hype is over, they're still going to be immature. Like, if they need to start growing up now and start apologizing for their actions if they're going to make it, like, in the long run, which I don't think they're going to do.
Well, that might be true with, like, the critics, but, you know, I feel like what you said earlier about the fans is kind of, they have really devoted fans, I feel like, so.
Yeah, and it makes it seem like the hype's fading, like, on our front, like, as far as, like, you know, a few guys Skyping about music right now, but, like, as far as the fans go, like, they're playing continually bigger and bigger venues. They're still exploding on that end of it.
And a lot of their fans are people their age. Like, they're very drawn to, you know, that kind of outlook. So that's
Last time they were in LA, like, a month ago, it was their biggest venue they played yet, you know, and the next time they come back, it'll probably be bigger. So
yeah, main singer Damian Abraham talked about has further talked about his uncertain kind of views on where Fucked Up's going to be going ahead to the future. And it's kind of weird that we reported on this, because he had talked about this right when David Comes to Life came out. But it kind of re-emerged last week for some reason.
I never heard about him talking about it before.
Really?
Yeah, I think I wrote the news story, and it's because I hadn't heard about it. Was shocking to me when I
really
read that story.
No.
But, I mean, the way it was presented, yeah, I guess he'd spoken about it before, that this, like, he might be done.
I mean, what he said was, like, he thought maybe some different guest singers would come in and kind of work with Fucked Up, because he felt like his time was limited. And he talked about that in interviews surrounding... I think I read it on the AV Club and on Pitchfork, and no one had kind of like really, you know, taken that out of context and put it out there, but it definitely was in those interviews. But I don't know. I think him Fucked Up without him, that's, I don't know if it's hard to
it's
say.
It's really that. Interesting to
yeah.
me, yeah, I guess. Like yeah. the band, if you've seen him live or even on record, it's like he is the. Probably the main reason people pay attention to that band.
Well, but, not
I
mean, really. I
understand him. I believe if you've seen him with his son, like when I saw him in Las Vegas last year, he brought his son for the whole weekend of the Matador at 21 Festival, and like the son, they even brought his son on stage with him when the band performed, and like you can see there's a real, like any father and son, I guess there's a bond, obviously, but you know, him wanting to be closer to his family, you can't really blame a guy for it,
right? What were you going to say, Rob?
I was going to say, Phil said that one of the main reasons people listen to Fucked Up is because of him. But actually, the things I like about Fucked Up are actually mostly all the things going on around him. But at the same time, like, he is like a figurehead for them, and I can't imagine them without him.
Well, he kind of has their live show. He's kind of their live show, right? Like, he...
Yeah, it's just him in the audience, him all sweaty and back hair and no shirt. And,
but I agree I agree with Rob that, like, why I liked David Comes to Life so much is kind of the instrumentation. The guitar work on the album is insane. Like, it's ridiculous.
Oh, no, I mean, I agree that, like, Fucked Up is, like, essentially it's, like, this, you know, this hardcore vocalist with this band that's not necessarily a hardcore band, you know?
Right.
That came up. There's a lot more than traditional hardcore is, and that's the dichotomy is what makes it attractive.
Right.
But, I mean, just without him, then that there is no dichotomy anymore. It's just, like, it's this... It'd be, I don't even know what the band would be without him, you know?
Yeah.
I don't really want to find out, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. It's true. Like, if they did get another vocalist, it's another hardcore guy, he's just going to be in his shadow. If they try and get someone, a more traditional singer, it's just going to be just another band. So, yeah.
And I feel like he kind of jumped the gun. I mean, obviously, you guys didn't hear about it till now, but even early on when he spoke, I think he was speaking just kind of like musing, like, well, maybe Fucked Up will go on without me. I don't know, maybe... But and kind of we're talking about it as if it's like definite thing that he'll leave. But I'm not sure that it's what his definite plans are. And it just sounds like he's kind of musing over it at this point.
Yeah, it sounds like he's just speculating.
Yeah,
he put up that tweet saying I'm not quitting Fucked Up. So
right,
yeah, the quotes I read, it was more like, you know, he might be less involved. They might do like a tour as Fucked Up, and then have the band do like another project separate from him, so they can keep busy when he wants to be at home.
Right.
So there's a lot of options for him. I don't see him necessarily like fully leaving the band, but I could see him doing a more reduced role, you know, where it's not so much a full-time job being in Fucked Up, that he could find his bandmates a full-time job and make Fucked Up a part-time band or something.
Yeah.
I think what they should do is, you know how they've released a hell of a lot of just one-off singles? I think they should just keep on doing that and maybe tour once every couple of years, and that would work out.
Yeah.
Because they've already got like a dozen 7-inches or something.
But at the same time, David Comes to Life is so, like, part of its like what's so great about it is it the concept of it is really interesting. Well,
if they made a series of 7-inches, it could be like a comic book thing where you have to wait for the next one to find
That's
the
true.
Next part of the story.
And they're not above doing something like that with that kind of alternate album that came out. Did you guys listen to any of that?
I didn't, no. Actually. I never got it.
I think I listened to 2 songs, and it was very, like... I remember one song sort of sounded like the Hold Steady or something. I don't know. But, Yeah, so I certainly hope that Fucked Up kind of continues in some shape or form. I don't know.
And then, I'm sure they will. Calm down, Will. It's okay.
Okay. I was going to start crying here.
Yeah, pretty depressing.
Yeah.
Don't leave us Fucked Up.
But enough doom crying. Sigur Rós is coming out with a new album, guys.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that. I'm
just going to jump off the call quick.
Why?
I don't think Eric likes this band. Or...
Oh, really?
Eric doesn't like most bands.
That's a problem for this, because that second Sigur Rós album is like my favorite album of all time.
Which one's the second one? Say it. Say the title.
I don't know. The one with the baby on it, man.
The one with the boring makeup music on it.
I like the ones that has the parentheses.
Yeah. that's another amazing, yeah. But who did you type that up, Phil? Or
I did it.
And what I read from that, it sounded sort of like, it sounded very lax. It sounded very casual. Like they just like met up and were like, yeah, let's record. Like it might not even have vocals in it, which is crazy to me.
That's what kind of it made me a little bit on guard about anticipating it.
Yeah.
Was how
that's made me more anticipated, I think.
I can tell you anticipated. Rob's words, whatever it sounds like, it's guaranteed to be beautiful and overwhelming. That's a guarantee by Mr. Hakimi in there.
Well,
it'll be beautiful and overwhelming.
100%.
Well, Mio, I didn't like Mio at all. So they do have something to prove, I think. I mean, Go was great, Jonesy's album.
Yeah, really
fucking awesome. Really, but Mio is not good. I'll just say it.
It's true. It's definitely their weakest album.
So I think they do have something to prove. So that's coming out this spring, right?
Yep. And they said it's going to be minimal, which sounds interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think Jonesy does need to sing, though. I mean, that sounds sort of like... I mean, because at some point they're just going to... Do you guys listen to Hammock at all?
No.
They basically sound like Sigur Rós without vocals. And, like, it's great, but it's very much like this kind of... Well, this sort of... I don't know, like, what... Watered down... Not watered down. Like, you just... It's just ambient in the sense that it's in the background and it's beautiful.
It's kind of toothless.
Yeah, exactly. And without... Go ahead.
I was going to ask you if you try and sing along to Sigur Rós when you listen.
I try, yeah, totally.
Well, I mean, you could just sing along in Hope Landing to the new one, make up your own words.
That would be hilarious if that was the con. They're like, now you have to sing.
I wish one of us could do a really good, like, Yonzi voice right now. And just, like...
No, yeah. Let's not.
Anyone? Try. Eric?
With the sound quality of this podcast, it's just going to break everyone's ears.
Yeah. And then we'll lose all our many fans. So that's it for news. We kind of blew through that. All right, let's talk about what we've been listening to, because we've been listening to some things, I think. Rob, what have you been listening to?
I have been listening to Sigur Rós' live album, Innie. Have you guys heard it?
Oh, I know Eric has.
Oh, I got that on repeat.
Eric loves it. I listened to it with you, Rob, I think in our living room.
Yes, we did listen to it in our living room.
That's the only time.
Aw, you guys are cute. Did you wear your matching bright eyes shirt?
Maybe.
I listened to the first track and like I hold Sigur Rós in such esteem that like if everything isn't up to like the perfect quality, I'll just like I started listening to the first track, which is I wish I could speak Icelandic so I could pronounce the titles, but it's Svenvengi Englar or whatever that song is.
Svenvengi Englar.
Okay, you're probably
that's one of their best songs ever.
Well, it's their best song ever, and it's the first one on a Gaitis Bajan version.
Is that the fetus one?
Yeah, that's the devil baby.
We'll just call it the fetus one.
Yeah,
that's what I know about.
And the point I'm trying to make is that the it doesn't match the quality of the album cut, and therefore I can't listen to it.
It doesn't translate as well live. I mean, it does if you're there, if you're in person, you're beholding the whole thing. And I think if watching the film helps as well.
Right.
But just listening to the audio is just kind of underwhelming.
Yeah, it's like...
Especially since a lot of the songs from this album, because they were touring their last album, which we already said is their worst, a lot of those songs are on here.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it does mean that when something like Hoppy Parlor comes up, it's amazing. Because that song's just made to be played like live. So
yeah, I only made it, you know, like a minute in. So what are some standouts from this?
Basically the stuff from Tack, Hoppy Parlor, Cygopla. Okay. Festival is actually really good, which is from their last album. That's really good. I don't know, everything else is just kind of whatever.
Are you reviewing?
I'm not, because I just say this is all kind of whatever. But
right.
The film is good. It's not up to the standards of Haima, which in my opinion is the greatest music DVD of all time.
Really?
Have you seen it?
I've heard the album and I really like it.
You have to see the film. It's just like the best thing ever. It's like Icelandic Tourist Board must have been like absolutely over the moon when that came out, because everyone who sees it wants to go to Iceland afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, Iceland seems like a pretty magical place. You know, you never meet anybody from Iceland, you know? I mean, at least not in the States.
Yeah, I've never met anyone from Iceland, that's true.
Yeah.
They have a really awesome music community there, though. Like, outside of Sigur Rós, their music scene's pretty amazing.
I mean, everything that comes out of there is always, like, has that... I mean, it all has a certain thematic connection to it, you know? I don't know.
Also, wait, one more thing about it. It's 1.7 hours long, which is, like, really long. It's just good if you're going to see them live. You want to see, like, a long show, especially for something like Sigur Rós. But, like, for an actual release, I want to cut it down. Like, I think live albums are best short. The only live album that justifies its length is the My Morning Jackets one, which I've completely forgotten the name of at the moment.
Okonokos.
I should also say this tour that they recorded was the tour where they decided to go out on the road without any strings, which is like, I don't know, it means it's like lacking a certain element, I think. Although they do have like a brass band for some bits.
Oh, you mean cool. Without the like the what's that called?
Yeah, like the whole of the last tour, they decided to go without any strings. It's good when you see it live; it's still amazing. So.
Right? Did you see them?
Yeah, I saw them twice on that tour, and it was like one of the best things I've ever seen the second time.
I mean, Jonesy, surprisingly, is like a pretty, you know, involved front man, from what I've seen.
Yeah. Did you see him touring his solo album? He was really energetic.
And they did that...
He looked all, like, Native American, too, and, like, had feathers. Yeah. And, like,
actually, one of the best things I saw last year, one of the best videos, was him playing in that bookstore that was, like... You remember that? When he was, like, it was an awful... experience, but then you see the video and it's like one of the most like endearing things I've ever seen. Just like this tiny bookstore, group of people surrounding him, dudes like banging on stools for percussion, and him just without even a mic. It was so good.
I have not seen that.
You should
look it up.
Yeah. And also, just another note is Jonesy's doing the soundtrack for We Bought a Zoo, the Cameron Crowe film.
Bro, has anyone seen the preview for that?
Yeah, it looks okay.
You think so?
Yeah, I think it looks okay. I think it looks
sentimental.
Yeah. I mean, that's Cameron Crowe, though. He's
it's hit and miss, you know, with him.
Yeah, I mean, Elizabeth Town was pretty awful, but
yeah. What was the last movie he made? Was that it?
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah, but I mean, Almost Famous is probably one of my favorite movies ever.
Yeah, yeah. He'll always have a place in the heart of any music fan.
Yeah, so good. Eric, what have you been listening to?
Well, I've been listening to one of the best albums of the year. That would be Parallax by Atlas Sound. Yeah. Have any of you guys listened to it?
Yes.
It seems you're not alone in thinking it's one of the best of the year, but on this podcast, I think you are. Because we all kind of think that it's just good and not very good.
I don't have an opinion, for the record. My opinion is that I like to be told whether Atlas Sound records are good, and I can't really think for myself on that.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I would go as far as to say it's Bradford Cox's best work.
Whoa,
like, outside
whoa,
of Deer
whoa.
Hunter?
It's like his fifth best album.
We can have this conversation, and both of us are probably right. I'm just saying personally.
Well, what do you like so much about it? Like,
I don't know. It's hard to explain. Like, I think it had a lot to do with influences outside of the record as well. Like, we got this album, like the review, a long time ago. And it was, like, right when, like, fall was coming and, like, the seasons were changing. And, like, we ran this feature a long time ago. But, like, there are some albums that just, like, feel so perfect in certain seasons.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, there was like, a certain, like, isolation, like, sense of, like, isolation and loneliness on Parallax. And, like, for some reason that, like, reminded me of fall and, like, the changing of the seasons. And, like, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but it caught my attention to more than just like, hey, this music is really good and I like this. Like, it was just like very like overwhelming sensation. Like, I've listened to it like so many times and I just think it's like absolutely amazing.
That's the thing for me, is like I've listened to it maybe 6 or 7 times and I still can't remember it. Like, it's really forgettable for me for some reason. Whereas I think,
yeah, I could see that.
And I think Logos and Let the Blind Lead are really memorable, and they have a lot of color to them, where I felt like Parallax, just my own personal listening to it or whatever, like, it didn't stick with me, I guess.
I guess it's a little more drab, maybe. Like, I guess I can understand.
I think maybe...
I can understand that.
I think maybe it's the arrangements. Like, I feel like his palette's a little bit more narrow, which, I mean, it's a lot more acoustic guitar and kind of just guitar songs, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
No guest vocalists.
Yeah, and like Logos.
Yeah, where's my panda bear?
Yeah, and what?
No, I prefer that he doesn't have panda bear. But
that's the best of that song, man.
That was one of the worst on Logos.
That's one of the best.
That's a really good song.
You have no opinion about Atlas.
Phil. Except when my panda bear is involved. Love you, Pandy.
what was I going to say? I actually listened to Parallax just before we came on for the first time in like 2 weeks or so. And I was actually surprised by how many of the songs that came on. I was like, oh yeah, I really like this one. It was like at least like 7 or 8 of the tracks on the album.
Yeah.
But there's still like blank spots where it just goes AWOL for me, especially in the second half.
There are definitely tracks that are kind of boring as all hell, but I don't know, it's arranged like track wise it's arranged in such a manner that like the album itself doesn't get boring. Like there are some shorter tracks that are boring. I'm blanking on the names right now. I think Doldrums is one of them, but the next song always seems to be like really spectacular.
Well,
like My Angel Is Broken is a great, great song.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's what I mean. Exactly. Yeah. So it's like, it's not a perfect album by any means, but I think it's really great. And I think the best stuff on here is the best stuff that Cox has done in his career. Like, I think Te Amo is by far the best song this year, too. Like, this might not be the best album, but I'm confident in saying that Te Amo is the best song this year.
Eric, are you going to pick up the record, the vinyl?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because 4AD always puts together amazing packages.
They do.
I'm still tempted to buy it, even though I'm not crazy about it. I probably will buy it.
Rob is a self-proclaimed Bradford Cox fanboy.
Yeah, I'm a huge Bradford Cox fanboy. So.
And that's the thing, is like I used to not be able to stand him because I thought that he looked funny and I thought that he was weird.
That's awful.
Eric, that's so Eric, that's so hypocritical. How many people probably don't like you because you look funny?
I don't know, at least one, apparently.
I didn't mean to say that I think, you know, I don't think Atlas Sound, like, I just think Bradford Cox is much smarter than I am, And the, then it kind of becomes, like, beyond reproach in my eyes, you know? It's like, I don't feel comfortable criticizing his music because I feel like it's usually probably my fault for not understanding it if I don't understand it.
I kind of felt that way with the new PJ Harvey record. I was really underwhelmed by it, but then everyone loved it. There's things going on here that I don't understand that make it amazing.
That's what happens when I listen to St. Vincent. But I understand that, because that's how – no, no, no. Cause this is how I used to feel about Bradford Cox, is that I thought his music was, like, super esoteric and strange, and, like, I was too naive and stupid to understand what was going on. And there are other bands out there I feel that way about as well, but I don't know. I guess it started with Halcyon Digest. Like, I really got into that album, like, for
Deer Hunter.
I was just going to say Halcyon Digest was the perfect gateway into Bradford Cox for anyone who was –
No, exactly. That's what I mean. Like, I think there were a lot of forces working outside of just like, hey, the music on this album is good. Like, I had just come off being really into Halcyon Digest after seeing Deer Hunter live earlier this year. And, like, I just really wanted to like this album. And it was, I just think it's gorgeous and I think it's amazing. So, but I mean, not everybody obviously is going to have, you know, the same approach, too. So.
Well, I think one of my, like, maybe I'm overlooking it in a sense, because like when critical opinions started to come out, it was all super positive and a lot of people are saying it's his best album, no question, and like I really didn't feel that way. So I think maybe it's kind of one of those things where like a lot of the reviewers who had a ton of time to spend with it felt like, you know, they had time to like let it sink in and grow on them, where I didn't really give it that, because I felt like Logos and a lot of Deer Hunter's other stuff is kind of immediate, and for me anyway, and so it's kind of like one of that weird dynamic changes, I guess.
Yeah. Well, we haven't published our review yet, so we'll leave listeners hanging on what.
Yeah, and I have a review out there, not for us, but for a different publication.
There you go. Yes.
Huh?
Boo.
Eric the blog whore.
Harsh words.
Eric Berg, a.k.a. lamest bro on the internet.
I was about to say, here you are, the lamest bro on the internet.
should we talk about that for news?
Nah. No, let's not talk about
it. We don't want him to get 64 more, or 34 more Facebook fans.
Yeah.
34? Specific number. Yeah. I have no idea what you guys are talking about, so.
Probably better.
Okay.
We'll explain it off the air.
So anything more about Parallax for anybody? Blah, blah.
I think Bradford Cox isn't that weird looking. Like,
he's got
like,
that one disease thing. He's got the disease thing and it freaked me out.
Like when I first saw him, I compared him to, he looks like the Wolfman, like, and he's in between Wolfman and regular man. You know, like when it's like he starts getting claws and stuff, but like he's not getting all the hair yet. But
so that's not weird.
Here's the thing. He's
styling himself up now, like with like suits and stuff, and like his hairstyle now. That it's like he's really like normalizing his look.
Yeah, he wears spandex all the time.
I don't think it does anything for him. His new style. I liked his old style.
Can I just defend the whole weird thing? Because the first time I ever saw him was at Pitchfork Festival when they were filling in for Cut Copy, because Cut Copy was late, and Bradford Cox and King Khan were on stage with the drummer from the Ruby Suns. And Bradford Cox took his pants off, and King Khan put a bouquet of flowers up his butt. So,
wait, up his butt?
Up Bradford Cox's butt.
All right, rad.
That sounds pretty punk rock, I think.
I'm just saying, I thought he was a weird guy, and I just wasn't into it.
No, that I could see that turning someone off to a musician.
Flowers up his butt. No,
yeah,
good.
That's your introduction to Bradford Cox. You're going to have some sort of stigma related to him, I think.
But we would like Bradford Cox to tour as Atmosound. Well, I would anyway.
Yeah.
He usually plays a few dates.
Yeah, he plays CFJ.
Yeah, I managed to see him when he did a date in London supporting Logos, so that was good.
Yeah, he did South By last year, and he did an LA date right when all that free stuff was coming out, when he released those four free albums.
Oh, yeah. Those were incredible, by the way.
I haven't listened to those, to be honest.
I've managed to get through all of them, and they're all, like, obviously, like, there are some parts that are worth skipping, because it's, like, four albums worth of material, but, like, for being four albums of material, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool that he was able to, you know, collect all his... What were they? Were they just odds and ends that he just put out there?
Yeah, he just said it was like bedroom recordings and odds and ends. I think some of it was like way older.
Covers and stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah, there was like Kurt Vile. There's like a Kurt Vile cover.
Some Bob Dylan, I think.
Yeah, Bob Dylan. Let me see here. Yeah, Bob. Yeah, I think those are the only two covers, but there's like alternate takes and some different stuff. So
you know what I think my problem is? Is I like Bradford Cox as kind of like a lot, like his Let the Blind Lead and Logos both had this weird kind of like electronic musician slant, and I like that better than like the way he arranged things, not just how it came out. And then Parallax feels like more like a singer songwriter album to me.
Yeah,
and it's hard for me to get on board with that, I guess, maybe. But anyway, we'll 130's opinion, official opinion, has yet to drop onto the internet.
More Walkabout, more stuff like Walkabout. That's what I want from Alice.
Yeah, thing. Or Quick Canal.
More Pandy.
More Pandy.
Yeah, that's an album that I sort of forgot about, the Panda Bear album.
Yeah, it exists, but
Tomboy. You
know, it exists in the same way that like the New Justice album exists.
I don't know if it's that bad. I'd call it good.
I like it. I have it on vinyl, man.
It's good, but it's just disappointing for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't have claws or teeth, you know, like.
Well, Person Pitch kind of like was like a crazy out of nowhere left field watershed almost album, where Tomboy is just kind of, you know.
I think there was just too much lead up to it too, like it's like a year of hype. And like singles being released, and when's Tomboy gonna come out? And when it finally did, it just didn't have.
Yeah, there were like crazy amounts of like cancellations and just
pushing back. And
yeah,
like we'd heard like half the songs ahead of time, and like you know you're expecting maybe different mixes, and it wasn't really some had different mixes, but yeah, it didn't really work out too much. It seems like I mean, no one's really thinking about it anymore. That's a shame. And he didn't really tour too much. He did a little bit.
Oh, so I've been listening to Mikhail Cronin's Mikhail Cronin. Which is he's kind of a garage rock dude from San Francisco. And I wanted to bring this on the podcast because I'm sort of taken with the garage rock scene that's going on. I don't even know, I can't even comment if it is a scene, but there seems to be something going on in San Francisco that is, you know, it results in stuff like Ty Siegel and this album, Mikhail Cronin.
The OCs and
The Fresh and Onlys and
The Fresh and Onlys, yeah.
I'm sort of taken with the idea of, I mean, a lot of this music is sort of atonal, and it's very, you know, rock-oriented, where a lot of modern indie rock has kind of strayed away from that sort of aspect. So in the case of Mikhail Cronin, have you, any of you guys listened to Ty Siegel at all?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, all the time. I'm a Ty Siegel fanboy. I'm a fanboy for all those. For all those bands, like just
okay.
Like listeners, if you want to go listen to something good, go pick up any record from Burger Records and listen to it, and you'll love it.
Okay, so you probably know more about this than I do.
Well, not necessarily, but no, I've listened to the record a couple times.
I'm just really interested in it because I feel like this kind of music is like really compartmentalized to San Francisco.
No, a scene. I mean, there's a very, very, very similar scene here in Portland. Like, okay. I don't think it's compartmentalized, but I think, I don't know.
Is it compartmentalized to the Pacific Northwest? I guess San Fran isn't really in that.
But I think it goes all the way to LA too, though. I think there's a lot of like, I mean, those bands all have a pretty big
like following. No Age, I guess.
Like No Age, you know, like kind of.
Well, I think it's existing in Portland because of like the grunge era is still definitely like a thing here.
Yeah, but I don't. I'm sort of just kind of like reaching for something, and
I think the ones that you're talking about in San Francisco, particularly the OCs and Fresh and Onlys, have elements of or the psych bands that came out of there. You know, because they had a bit. There's a big psych scene.
Well, so
in San Fran,
Mikhail Cronin is kind of like he and Ty Segall, or why am I pronouncing it like that? Ty.
Ty. Is he French?
I don't know. Like, why did I just pronounce it like that? Ty Segall.
They're homies.
They're homies. They went to high school together, and Ty Segall's on.
His drums on this record, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. But it's also interesting to compare and contrast because they're very similar, obviously. But I feel I was gonna say, like, I think Mikael Cronin has like this weird. He's more indebted to 1960s, maybe 1970s stuff, whereas Ty is more indebted to the early 90s kind of stuff, and even what's going on right now with like this kind of weird beach rock stuff. I don't know what I'm talking about, but
it's not beach rock. Don't call it beach rock.
Okay, sorry.
Because then people are gonna think it's like real estate.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of just it's like more like waves, I guess, than real estate, right?
Jay Retard.
Is he
Jay Retard? Ross saying it real fast. All British,
rest in peace. He's dead. Don't say his name wrong.
Wait, is he from California?
No.
Oh.
No, but they're similar in style, I think.
Yeah.
Are we still talking about Mikael Cronin? Are we talking about Ty Segall? I'm sorry.
I don't know.
I think
Ty Segall's similar to Jay Retard. I don't think Mikael Cronin really is.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Okay, yeah. I think Mikael Cronin is more. There's more pop elements to his music than Ty Segall.
It's more like songs than just like.
It's a little sunnier and like, I don't know, like shinier. Those are weird words to use, but like it feels very much like there's like something happy going on when he's singing. I don't know.
The last song on the record, "The Way Things Go," totally reminds me of some like a McCartney song, basically.
Yeah, it's like it's got that 60s, 70s, you know, rock pop.
Yeah. But he totally layers in a ton of fuzz, which I like.
And the first song on the record has the best flute solo of the whole year.
Yeah, exactly.
and that's saying a lot in a year where the flute solo has returned with force.
And the sax solo even more, and Apathy has a really good sax solo in it as well. So.
Yeah, so I don't know what I was trying to say with Mikael Cronin.
It sounds like you're more curious about him.
Yeah,
than,
I
like,
am.
Trying to talk about him.
He did kind of come out of nowhere, like with that song Apathy. Everyone loved it, and then no one's talked about the album at all.
Right now.
I like the album.
No,
yeah,
that,
I mean.
Well, the thing is like, did he even like tour? Like, I haven't heard like anything else outside of just like a single.
He's played some dates, but it's like opening for. Like the OCs or Ty Segall or something, you know?
Well, that's fine. I mean, that's whatever, but like. Yeah.
Wait, can I just say, I think it's the OCs, right?
Yeah, yes.
It's like throwing me off, you guys
are
saying.
Are we going to get into the OCs now?
The OCs. Anyway, but yeah, I'll talk. So, what I think of the album is it really surprised me listening to it because obviously, like, I think Rob said, no one has really talked about it. Since it came out, and it's really good. It's like, it has a lot of like pop craft thrown in there, but it's also very much, you know, this rock kind of garage rock, heavy distortion kind of stuff. But it, like there at the end of the first song, "Is It All Right?" has a fucking flute solo. So there you go, I guess. And
here's my thing: this album is that it's like, who is this album for?
What do you mean?
What?
Like, who wants to, like, it's good. It's really good. Like, I think everybody on the show that has listened to it has agreed with that. But, like,
yeah, we all
I just
like
don't.
It.
Yeah, but, like, it just, it also, like, doesn't sound like anything at the same time.
It feeds into the scene,
which, like, has, like, so many other better records than this. Like, I don't know. I feel bad saying because I like this a lot, but
Eric is the expert in this. But for us, like who just skimmed the top of this scene, I'll take this. I'm happy with it.
This is very far removed from that scene. Like for reasons like what Phil was talking about, that it's like it's much more of like a pop album than it is like a
stream. More accessible for me even for this scene, because like I don't like VOCs really. Like I don't like listening to them.
This is like if you're like, oh, I really like Ruby Go Home by the OCs, like maybe go listen to this.
Yeah, exactly.
Or like I really like some of like Ty Segall's newer stuff, which is kind of more pop oriented kind of than like garage rock jammy kind of stuff. So I don't know. This just like I just feel like this album falls in a weird place between like the super underground like tape labels and stuff like dumb shit that I'm into, and like the main like the more mainstream.
Well, that's why I like it, because I feel like it does have a certain like atonal quality that a lot of pop stuff coming out now doesn't have, and that's kind of why I like it so much, because I really like when someone
it doesn't go far enough. Like it's not Waves, you know, like Waves is one of those bands I can kind of get away with that. But like this just doesn't go quite far enough where I just feel like it falls in between both genres.
All right, fair enough. So I wish I had more to say about Mikal Cronin, but I think Eric said enough about it.
I didn't mean to steal.
I wasn't saying you were. I just feel like I was curious about it, and now I've been sated.
Yeah, like, it's not, like, a weird, like, with that scene, it's, like, you're either, like, a weird Stooges, like, cover slash tribute slash parody band, like, this band Personal in the Pizzas, or, yeah. Like, you're, I don't know, like, you have to be, like, that, like, obscure and stupid to, like, be in that scene. And like these, just
someone
like,
still someone needs like, to step up though out of that scene. Like I feel like all these bands they're swinging and they're getting singles or whatnot, but no one's really hit the home run yet.
Ty Segall has. Ty Segall absolutely has.
I don't think he has. His name's out there, you know, and like he gets some positive reviews, but he doesn't have that like classic album that is like people point to like. When they refer to this scene, you know, this Francisco garage scene. Check out this.
Well,
album,
What is the central text of garage rock from the last 5 years?
Like, Melted. You go listen to Melted.
I've listened to Melted. It's just okay. I like Mikal Cronin more.
I remember going back to like.
That's fine. But if you want like the text to go to, like this is like what this scene is. Like I think Melted encapsulates that scene.
Like last year, I interviewed Merrick Long from the Dodos, and who's also from San Francisco, and he was talking about like the scene his band fits into and how it doesn't fit into the garage scene that's typical of San Francisco. And this is last year, like maybe last summer, and like I was thinking back then, like what the hell? I mean, like I've heard of this garage scene in San Francisco, but I can't name a single band out of that, you know. And within the last year, I've heard. You know, Fresh and Onlys and the OCs. And,
yeah, but like that isn't even like that's. I don't know.
I feel like
Ross. But then if that's not what he's talking about, then I really don't know what he was talking about. Like, what's this like?
Yeah, it's like the garage rock scene is like just a bunch of bands that play the same houses every night and like release. It's like two labels that'll release every single band, and like members of each band will like be in other bands together, and they like. They only put out tapes and like they do all this crazy stuff, but like the OCs and Fresh and Onlys and Ty Segall and Mikal Cronin like all exist sort of on the fringe as like the bands that have broken out from that.
Yeah,
but
the bands who don't play in garages anymore.
No, exactly.
I mean,
is it like last week we were saying how indie no longer means bands who are on indie labels? It's like garage rock no longer means bands who play in garages. It doesn't mean
I don't know if it ever like literally meant that though. Like we can only play in garages or we're not.
But if you think of the San Francisco music scene, the bands that really made it like are the bands that don't fall into that garage rock sound, like Girls or the Dodos or you know even like Weekend starting to get like more play now. You know, like, they're all bands that fall even farther from that tree.
That's not the only scene that exists there. For me, I guess it's different because, like, I'm not, like, involved, quote-unquote, with that scene, but, like, I'm invested in it, like, from, like, a fan standpoint.
Tell them to make a record that we'll, like...
Listen to Personal in the Pizzas. No, listen to Personal in the Pizzas, Raw Pie.
It's really...
Eric.
Listen to the name of that band.
Eric.
What?
Get Sorry. Get on the farm PR to curate a sampler mixtape.
We could do that.
We'll do it then.
You should write a feature and
Eric, do a feature. Eric, do a fucking feature.
I asked Evan if I could write a feature on tapes last year and he wouldn't let me. So I want to write one this year.
Yeah, well, I'm in charge now and I say tapes are cool.
Garage tapes feature. We did that introduction to Squee, remember, Rob? Didn't we?
Yep.
Yeah, I have a couple Squee tapes that are awesome.
Yeah, we did a whole introduction for that genre because no one knew what the hell it was. So, like, do it for this because we obviously need help.
But introduction to garage rock. You think you know garage rock, but you have no idea. And then it's like...
And then it'll be about personal pan pizza band.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, and then it's like, it is. It's just like a bunch of dumb stuff. Like, one of the band's names is like Cum Dumpster and just like stupid stuff like that.
That's a horrible name.
Yeah, that's why they
That's what I'm saying. It's just stupid stuff to like be irreverent just to be irreverent.
That's why Ty Siegel breaks out, because it's just Ty Siegel. Phil, what have you been listening to?
I have been listening to the new Cass McCombs album.
His second Hubris. Album. His second
of
album.
Year.
Yeah.
Of 2011. I liked it. I liked it better than Wits End, which a lot of people liked Wits End. I mean, I think it got Pitchfork Best New Music. And I reviewed that one for BPM, gave it a 69.
Really?
So it's a little harsh.
The famed 69, man.
69, which is almost good, in my opinion. It's almost good. But, Humor Risk is a much different record. It's a lot more mid-tempo and, you know, guitar-driven songs. There's, like, distortion. It kind of rocks a little bit. And it's catchy. Less... It's like catchy very, melodies.
Yeah, very catchy. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's a little fun, even at times. And then it's still got the stinging Cass McCombs, like, you know, kind of intense personal lyrics and... introspection, which is still there.
I think you said this in your review of it, but the songs on Humor Risk, like, the same thing, which is, like, over 6 minutes long, but it doesn't feel like it, whereas, like, on Wits End, the songs that are 6 minutes, you feel every single minute of it, and you're like, this is dragging on.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's the thing about Wits End for me, it was, like, it's one thing to write songs about, you know, about pain or suffering or whatever, but if you're making your audience suffer, too... But sometimes it's not a great listen, you know? It's one thing to feel the pain of the singer, but, like, you don't want to just necessarily always dive into that and listen to, you know, an hour of pain and suffering. But with Humor Risk, it's a little more subtle and nuanced, I feel.
I haven't listened to Humor Risk yet, but I did like Wits End. It didn't grab me at all, but I thought Country Line was a really good song.
Yeah. It's County Line.
Excuse me.
Yeah, County Line's actually a beautiful song, and there's a few more on Wits End that are, like, A Knock Upon the Door, The Closer's a good song,
yeah.
A Lonely Doll comes out pretty well in the live version, but the Humor Risk, it's a little bit more immediate, and there's one song in the middle, To Every Man, His Chimera, which...
Chimera.
Was it Chimera? Chimera?
It's Chimera.
Chimera? Alright. And I looked that up and it was like it's some kind of like multi-animal, like,
it's Greek, a demon.
Greek
it's
thing?
It's a progressive American metal band.
No, it's like a mythological demon.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it also means there's like a second...
It's like half. It's like one of the half snake, half lion shit bird.
It also means an impossible or foolish fantasy, which I thought was interesting. It's like a secondary meaning to it.
Layers upon layers.
Layers upon layers. Yeah. But that song, I saw him play it when he was first starting his Wits End tour, and it sounds on the album just like something from Wits End, but within Humor Risk, it works so perfectly because it's like a change of pace rather than like what the whole album sounds like.
Yeah.
And it made me appreciate some of the stuff from Wits End more, hearing something that was written during the same sessions of it. but kind of held back. And maybe thinking that Wits End wasn't such as average of an album as I thought it was, but more that it was just too much of the same thing too heavily.
Right, that's true.
I think I'm the only one here who hasn't heard Wits End. I got into Cass McCombs in Catacombs and then skipped Wits End for some reason.
It is slow and like kinda draggy, but I still like it, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I like it too. I mean, the 69 is not a bad review. You know, it wasn't
a hateful
review. But one of the most interesting things about Cass, and the thing I kind of want to discuss about this, is his idea, where he doesn't do interviews traditionally. He just did one for Pitchfork for this, and it's like it's a rare occasion that he actually did an on-the-phone interview with somebody. And he speaks that he likes the idea of like, artists maintaining kind of like an anonymity with their art, and how it's like, you know, he brings up like the best artists like Moses and Homer, and you know, you don't know anything about like, you know, who they were as people, you know, you just have like this work that they created, and how he thinks, you know, that's a better place to be in as an artist. And I was kind of wondering what you guys think, if you guys would rather know a lot about the bands or artists creating the music, or if you think it's better just to have the artwork stand on its own.
Well, like I was saying before, I feel like if Odd Future had stayed away, like had just kind of stayed away from their music and just let it out there and kind of appear in those brief kind of weird performances, I think, you know, that would have done wonders for them, I think. But I think that like ambition to have anonymity is like really, it's hard to say if that has anything really to do with the art, you know, like, if Odd Future, why am I going back to Odd Future? If like I reviewed this album earlier in the year called Tiger and Woods, which is this kind of like disco edits album.
I like Tiger and Woods. They're awesome.
Yeah, they're great. And kind of like what their idea is that they want to be anonymous because that's part of the nostalgia of like where those disco edits came from. It's like part of the you know, the appeal of disco edits is that they come out anonymously on these white labels, and they just like seem to appear out of nowhere, and there's no kind of human element to back it up. And in the review, I made the point that that's like a really interesting, you know, dynamic to make. For, you know, we have this kind of nostalgia boom where we're just, like, all caught up in recreating these things from, you know, yesteryears. And, like, part of the nostalgia has become kind of what Cass McCombs is doing, or what Tiger and Woods is doing, is, like, creating this anonymity. When in the internet age, it's, like, so hard to find that, and almost impossible to find that. And I think go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, the difference between, like, that, like, Tiger and Woods and Cass McCombs is, like, they seem to be, like, not, like, begging for, like, nostalgia or just, like, trolling for people to be, like, oh, I remember that from, like, the late 80s or, like, early 90s. Like, they seem to be, like, honoring, like, things that are technically, like, nostalgic just because they're from, like, they seem to be, like, honoring the past instead of just, like, trying to cash in on it.
No, I agree. Like, I totally agree. Tiger and Woods have this, like, really cool outlook where when they do interviews, it's, like, they're very enthusiastic about it. They're not like, yeah, we're cool by doing this.
No, I was agreeing with you. I'm just saying I think that's why it works for them. Like, yeah. I think that's why I like bands like that and why I can't stand Odd Future. Because, like, I don't, I don't know.
So I think in terms of your question, which was, what was your question?
Well, no, I just wanted to discuss like what maybe the benefits and the I mean, I can think of some albums that you don't really get unless you knew something about the artists and like who they were. Like I think of like a Bon Iver with the with For Emma, and like the whole like mythology around that album. With, he goes up to the cabin, record it. If you didn't know all of that, sure, it would still stand up to be a good listen, but would it still be the same like love for that album without knowing all that stuff about him and about how he recorded it?
See,
yeah, that album's gone down in like folklore because of that. because of that story.
Or the antlers with a hospice is another like example. Or it'd still be a good listen either way, whether what you knew about it or not, but knowing about the artist and how they made it makes it better almost.
Yeah, and I was just been getting into this I guess he's an artist, Black Devil Disco Club. Have you ever listened to him? Anybody?
Yeah, I have.
And like his kind of backstory is like he recorded this EP in 1978 and then no one really cared about it, and it's like this gothic kind of disco stuff, and over the years I think like Aphex Twin and a bunch of other people like spun it and DJ sets, and then Chemical Brothers sampled it, and then finally in 2006 this guy surfaced again and put out another record, and I think still to this day it's unclear whether it's called 28 Later, and it's unclear whether that guy you know, produced those songs for that album in 2006 or back in the 70s. Because they really, even the EP back in the 70s sounds like it could exist now. And there's all this mysterious kind of folklore to it and this great backstory. And then he's put out two more albums after 28 Later, and they've kind of like declined and like sort of like finished off that legend because it's like, oh, wait, well, he's not as great as he was back or in 30 years later or whatever. And I don't know if in that case, like, if it makes the album better, because you have to, you know, take into account, like, how it sounds then, how it sounds now. But in the case of Bon Iver, like, that's a... Because there's a story to that, you know? Like, a very... It's like a personal story that drives the album versus just kind of like that the thing that I was just talking about with Black Devil, which is just kind of like the thing that surrounds the where the music went versus, you know, the thing that made the album happen in a certain sense.
And I think there's, I mean, maybe like levels of it, because like with like the Bon Iver example or something, like, yeah, maybe the backstory makes it a good album, but like Cass McCombs is talking, like the people he brings up are like Homer and Moses, and like, you know, his level of like art that he's striving for is maybe on a different level than just making a really good album. You know, he's trying to make something that will last like thousands of years or something like that.
Yeah, I guess
break it to you, but Humorisk isn't that good.
Yeah, exactly. You know? But the A album might be like that. His first album, A, is a,
yeah, I think that's almost pretentious to the. It's not even pretentious anymore.
It is, but it's. You know, you could say that, you know, but if he hadn't done an interview, you would never even known that, you know, even like he did this one interview.
No, I don't think that's a, you know, pretension is whatever.
You guys carry on about pretension.
Well, no, he's just holding himself up to a pretty high standard. That's all I was going to say, you know, and like, you can't fault someone for ambition, you know, if it's pretentious ambition, whatever, but like, it's ambition.
But
I think you don't have to know the story of someone. Like the ones we brought up have all been like stories. It's better to know. Sometimes it's just good to know their personality. Like Jeremy Larson in his review of At the Sound for Consequence of Sound today, his opening paragraph is all about you'll understand this album more if you know who Bradford Cox is and know about his condition and stuff. I mean, there's no story.
Yeah.
Just have to know the personality. And I think Cass McCombs. We might not know that much about him, but knowing little about him on purpose tells us something about his personality, or something we can infer about his personality, which also gives us like insight into his writing as well.
And also to bring up your example of the antlers for the story, I actually didn't know that till after I listened to it, and that album just is destructive because you know, he puts that story. He frames that story in the album itself and kind of tells a different story based on that story. And in the case of Bon Iver, that it's almost like a background. Whereas, I mean, it's obvious, it comes through that there's obviously some issue, like he's dealing with the breakup and he's the themes that are in his song are kind of, you know, reflective of that story, but it's less involved and you kind of just hear about it as the legend, you know? It's like the background. I don't know what I'm talking about anymore, but...
Huh?
Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting to think about, you know? That's what I say.
exciting.
It's called Studio Lurk. Tell us about it.
Well, Phil, you explain how we know Max and those guys.
Max is a BPMer from way back, and he lives in the LA area, and I see him at shows sometimes, and he's a cool guy. And he hit us up because he works on a lot of different projects. I think he works like a major skate company too, and doing like video work.
He used to work for DC, and now he works for Hurley.
Okay, well, I didn't know if we wanted to like plug their things. So I was gonna be vague about it.
No, fuck them. I like Volcom instead. Yeah. But,
you ever watch Wheel of Fortune? You know, like they'll never say like exactly like what company they work for. You know, and they're like, I work for a major, you know, security banking company. Anyway, but so Max brought this to the table that he had access to, you know, this recording studio and would like to try to arrange a video session there. And we apparently know Symbol Z guitarist somehow from way back, and Evan, they agreed to
it. Evan has been friends with them through the internet for a while. Like, they know each other from like New York now. I think they've met. I've met Joe and those guys in London a couple times as well. So yeah, we're like friends with them. So we called in a favor while they were in the area, sorted it all out, got them to come into this amazing recording studio. It was like state of the art. Like, I'm pretty sure albums have been recorded there. It was pretty pimped out, wouldn't you say, Phil?
Yeah, no, yeah, you had Christmas lights.
A bunch of leather sofas, magazines everywhere.
Yeah, it was
awesome. I could have lived there. I'm pretty sure.
Oh my god, magazines?
Yeah, man, magazines.
They have magazines in doctor's office.
They have magazines in the 130 BPM office.
Do they really?
Yeah.
Isn't that where you live?
Just under the radar and Spin. That's all we do.
Yeah, that's where I live. Yeah, we've got under the radar and Spin. That's it. We only have Spin.
Do you have the new Spin with Skrillex on it?
There's a newer one now. We got the Daz Racist.
The one with Skrillex on the front is by Phil's bed. I'm not even joking.
It's a bedtime reading.
We are pretty off topic.
And that
right
and
now.
A bottle of lotion.
Oh god.
She's a pretty girl.
What the hell is I saying? Yeah, so they came in, they rocked out a couple of songs. So far we put up Keep Me Waiting. But they also did the opening track. What the fuck is it called? Rifle Eyesight. They did that as well, which hopefully will go up soon. But
an extended interview. I don't know if we'll put up the whole interview too. Like they talked. Yeah. It was probably like a good 15-20 minute interview session.
So watch that now, and hopefully we'll be doing another session in the not too distant future. Some interesting names being thrown around. I don't want to.
Yeah, we won't. We won't.
I don't want to spoil the surprise in case it doesn't happen and we feel like idiots.
Just we did get contacted by a well-known record label throwing around a bunch of cool artist names.
Man, we are like implicitly name dropping all over this thing.
Skrillex. Yeah,
it may or may not be Skrillex.
Yeah, so please go and watch that and tell all your friends. And link to the BPM page, not the Vimeo page.
Yeah, I think that's gonna do it for episode 3 of the 130 BPM podcast. We'll be back next week with Sean, hopefully. I think the NBA lockout just made him... He's just crying in somewhere, I think. That's going to do it for the podcast. We'll see you next week, guys. Bye.
See ya.